This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. If you designate your Thrivent Choice dollars to Issues Etc. online before October 31st, Thrivent will designate an additional $25 to Issues Etc. For more information on how you can designate funds to Lutheran Public Radio and give an additional $25 to LPR, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page at issuesetc.org.
So when Jews in Budapest were marked with that yellow star, Wallenberg shielded them behind the blue and yellow of the Swedish flag. When they were forced into death marches, he showed up with the food and water that gave them life. When they were loaded on trains for the camps, he climbed on board too and pulled them off.
That's President Obama speaking in Sweden on his way to Russia about Raoul Wallenberg. Now, if you haven't heard the name, don't feel bad. I hadn't heard it before today either. The president was speaking about a man who in Swedish history, recent Swedish history, is famed for saving thousands of lives. We have heard of other people who during the Holocaust risked their own life, their own reputations, careers, and resources to save lives, but I haven't heard Raoul Wallenberg. We thought, who's he talking about, this Lutheran man in Sweden? And we thought, who could we talk to about that? Pastor Eric Andre joins us to talk about a Swedish Lutheran who sheltered Jews, saved many lives during the Holocaust. He's associate pastor for campus ministry at First Trinity Lutheran Church in Pittsburgh, a native of Sweden, and a lecturer on Raoul Wallenberg. Pastor Andre, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd, it's great to be with you again.
Why haven't I heard of this man?
Well, you know, I think one reason is that he didn't have a, multi-million dollar film made by Steven Spielberg about him. Everyone's heard of Oscar Schindler, as they should, and he's certainly worthy of the acclaim that he's received. But I think folks like Wallenberg and even some others have kind of gotten left behind, so to speak, simply because maybe media attention wasn't there to the extent it was for an Oscar Schindler. There's lists out there of those who have saved thousands of lives during the World War II, during the Holocaust, and some, for one reason or other, have received more attention than others. There was, I recall, back in the 80s, a TV movie made about Wallenberg, and there was another one maybe a little bit later on, I think that was made in Sweden and then subtitled. But frankly, when you got, when you got Spielberg behind it and that whole push and that whole company, then it makes a big difference. I'm not sure beyond that, why? And it's very interesting because I've done a good bit of research and speaking about Wallenberg over the past year and a half or so since his centennial was last year, 100 years since his birth. And since then, I've started to ask people, have you ever heard of Raoul Wallenberg? And of all the non-Jewish people I've asked, I think only one or two had ever heard of him before I started speaking about him to them. Jewish people, all of them, and Swedish people, I should mention that when I ask Swedish people, they have heard of him, and certainly the Jewish people. But non-Swedish, non-Jewish people, no, they've not heard of him.
Now we sometimes have a picture of kind of a, Anne Frank kind of picture of that all the Jews and all the gypsies and all the unwanted in the Nazi regime who were sheltered or who were saved from the Holocaust were done so in a very surreptitious way. But Wallenberg actually uses some kind of position of authority to protect Jews. Tell us about how he came to that position and how he used it.
Well, he was at age 31, almost 32. He came to Budapest, Hungary, near the end of World War II, under the auspices of the Swedish government and actually also partially funded by the U.S. government through the War Refugee Board under Roosevelt. And he came ostensibly as a diplomat, worked at the embassy there. But what he was really doing was supposed to come up with an idea, some sort of plan, to save as many Jews as possible. Adolf Eichmann, the infamous Angel of Death, had personally planned and supervised the deportation of the Hungarian Jews in a span of just over a month, early May to mid-June in 1944. There were some 150 trains that brought well over 400,000 men, women, and children to Auschwitz and other camps. The Germans, the Nazis, knew they were losing. Eichmann knew he was losing, and this was kind of the final stage of the final solution. And Wallenberg came, as I said, as a young man, funded by both the Swedes and the Americans. And in his position of authority and taking advantage of the fact that the Nazis, especially the common soldier, was taught to obey authority, he was really an actor. He would sometimes come right when they were about to load the Jews onto the trains, and he would set up a little card table and get his megaphone and say, I'm here on behalf of the Swedish government. Anyone with a Swedish passport or Swedish papers, please make an orderly line right here. And the Nazi guards would be so stunned, and these Jews would line up with these what were called Schutzpasses. These were sometimes real, usually fake, perhaps even fakes of fakes, and sometimes even just simply scraps of paper that Wallenberg and his associates had produced and published at the Swedish embassy. So if they could prove any connection to Sweden, no matter how dubious, these passports would allow these Jews to leave Hungary and escape death. And so, yeah, go
well,
ahead.
Well, I mean, just a kind of a point there. It shows two things, doesn't it? That one, if someone with sufficient chutzpah in that situation of confusion could very cleverly be able to do this. I take it that some of these passports were a little more, as you said, the scraps of paper that had his own signature on them.
Yes, certainly. Yeah, he was dogged in his determination, and he was he would put on a tour de force of acting. I mean, he would come as often a solitary man, maybe one assistant with him, maybe a photographer. They captured a lot of this history with photography, which is fantastic. And he was just he just demanded the release of what he called his Jews, and he would line them up. And there were others also that would assist in this. It was mainly Wallenberg and these fake Swedish, often usually fake Swedish passports, but there were other countries as well, Spain and the Vatican and others. But he just persisted, and so that was one aspect of what his work was, these passports. The other thing was that he managed to convince, he was unrelenting in his negotiation, and he managed to convince a man by the name of Laszlo Ferenczi, who was lieutenant colonel in the fascist Hungarian military police. This guy was in charge of establishing the ghettos that from which they would eventually deport these Jews. And he managed to convince this guy to allow initially three houses to be opened for 650-some people who were then to emigrate to Sweden as soon as the circumstances permitted. And these safe houses then were established by the Swedish embassy, the Swedish Red Cross. Eventually, others got onto the idea, and Spain, Portugal, Switzerland, El Salvador, all of these, they established these safe houses as extensions, in this case, of the Swedish embassy. And so they effectively housed on Swedish territory thousands of Jews, eventually as many as 35,000 Jews who held foreign passes from any of these nations I just mentioned would cram into these protected houses. Wallenberg used his own family fortune. They were perhaps the most wealthy family in socialist Sweden at that time. They were a boxing, as in making boxes, and political and banking family. And he used his own wealth. He used, as I said, funding from the U.S. government, and they set up all these safe houses. And these were saved this way.
So is it safe to say of him that, and this is true of a lot of the people who acted this way during the war, that he would really stoop to no, there's no depth to which he would stoop, obviously, in order to save these lives, get these people to a safe place.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I spoke about Wallenberg at one of the universities where I serve as campus pastor, Chatham University, last year. They do a global focus program each year where they focus on a region or country for the whole year with curricular and co-curricular, extracurricular stuff. And this was Scandinavia last year, and I was asked to speak in a political science / history class on the title I was given, fortuitously enough, was Wallenberg, Righteousness and Diplomacy. And at one point I mentioned that I didn't talk a whole lot about his diplomacy because he was not your traditional diplomat by any means. I mean, his diplomacy involved not only the traditional ones of negotiation and advocacy, international relations, foreign policy, but threats of war crime charges, perceived or real, bribes, trading food for people, fake documents, propaganda, property. the power of his personality. And as Wallenberg himself said at one point when explaining his success, from some reason or another, it worked. Or what I would call, frankly, the miraculous, I think, was at hand here as well.
Do we have any of his rationale? I mean, do we have any documents from him, or writing, formal or informal writing, that explains what he thought of his actions, especially in the context of the Nazi aggression and the Holocaust?
Well, it was... I don't think we have a lot. Interestingly enough, he would often refer to his Jewish heritage. I think I read somewhere that, you know, he would claim that he was one quarter or one eighth Jewish, but really went much further back than that. He was like 1/16th or 1/32nd or something like that. He found his rationale maybe early on. See, he had a lot of interactions early on in his... He originally studied architecture. As a matter of fact, he got his degree here in the United States at the University of Michigan and ended up traveling from Michigan after he came back, ended up working in Palestine as a banker in a position arranged by his grandfather. And when he was there, he met a lot of German-Jewish refugees. This was in 1936, who told him of the persecution that was already underway under Hitler and worse to come. And there's no doubt that these, you know, he took these to heart, and they proved to be formative. He wrote to his grandfather at this time. He said, "To tell the truth, I don't feel especially bankish. A bank president would have something judge-like and calm about him, and moreover be cool and cynical. My boss and my cousin are no doubt typical, and I myself feel as different from them as I possibly could. I think it is more in my nature to work positively for something than to sit around telling people no." So no offense to bankers out there, but and then some years later, in 1942, he ended up partnering with a Hungarian Jew in a business in which they would trade foodstuffs between Sweden and Central Europe. One assignment during this time took him to Nazi-occupied Paris, and there he was obviously brought into direct contact with the fate of the French Jews: deportation, starvation, disease, vandalism, and much. I think this was formative for, you know, finding his goal in life.
When we come back, we'll talk more about Raoul Wallenberg, a Swedish Lutheran who sheltered Jews during the Holocaust. Pastor Eric Andre is our guest.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
You believe that there's not one error in the Bible. That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line. Available 24/7. 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
Wallenberg's life is a challenge to us all, to live those virtues of empathy and compassion, even when it's hard, even when it involves great risk. He came from a prominent family, but he chose to help the most vulnerable. He was a Lutheran, and yet he risked his lives to save Jews. I will never be able to go back to Stockholm, he said, without knowing inside myself I'd done all a man could do to save as many Jews as possible.
President Barack Obama speaking earlier this week in Stockholm about Raoul Wallenberg, a Swedish Lutheran who harbored Jews during the Holocaust. Pastor Eric Andre is our guest. We're remembering Raoul Wallenberg. I was curious, Pastor Andre, about the position, the political position that Sweden had that afforded him the ability as a diplomat, or ostensibly, you said, a diplomat, to pull this kind of stuff off.
Well, yeah, I mean, Sweden was officially neutral in World War II, and I think, therefore, a lot of the work, especially at the beginning by Wallenberg, was just overlooked. He wasn't suspected precisely because of Sweden's neutrality. He was simply a guy working at neutral Sweden's embassy. And, you know, and that, therefore, his diplomacy, as you alluded to, was always, it could therefore be more easily put in service to his righteousness. I mean, one of the cardinal teachings of the Lutheran Church is the distinction between the two kinds of righteousness. Of course, the passive righteousness that is given Christ and clothed with Christ through baptism and which saves us, but then also the active righteousness that serves neighbor. And I think this found a unique combination in Wallenberg. You mentioned earlier in terms of his diplomacy, in terms of the rationale of his thinking, how much we know. He did write in January 1945, right near the end of his time in Budapest, that he wrote, quote, "I have witnessed the suffering of the Hungarian people, and if it is not too presumptuous to say so, I think I have participated in it spiritually to such an extent that it has now become my suffering as well." And so his identifying with and focusing on his neighbor's needs in this way, almost by any means necessary, we could say, this is that, you know, very, very Christian, very Lutheran. I mean, Luther addresses a type of arrogant moralism which is not concerned with realities, not concerned with one's neighbor, but only with one's own holiness, seeing the law or the Ten Commandments as some sort of checklist to you know, impress others or impress oneself or impress God. But the goal of action must be, Luther said, and Wallenberg lived it, must be in the midst of this sinful world in which we inescapably participate, we have to live to help our fellow human beings and further their well-being. And so Wallenberg's diplomacy was always in service, always in submission to this act of righteousness. It ruled his heart and mind, and, you know, as it should be for all of us at all times.
Now, you mentioned before the edict from Eichmann that got much of the latter part of his life and action underway. Just refresh our memories. What was it again? What was the order that Eichmann issued? You know, what was the context in the progress of the war, and how did it impact Wallenberg and those he saved?
Well, this was, I mean, Wallenberg's time in Budapest was right at the end of World War II, right before, you know, the Axis forces, the German forces and others surrendered at the hands of the Allies, which in this case was the Russians and the Americans. The Russians were coming in to liberate Budapest, to liberate Hungary, and Hitler, Eichmann, and others in the Nazi camp saw this, and they were obsessed. They were obsessed with the Jewish question. They were obsessed with the final solution of extermination, and so they drew up this grand plan, which was, in some ways you could say, was working very well, to simply deport hundreds of thousands of Jewish women, men, and children from Budapest to the concentration camps in Germany. And this was well underway. They had some of them. They would march them, 130 miles, 140 miles. There was a march that occurred in October 1944 into November, where about 8,000 of the Jews died in the way, but another 50,000, including elderly, pregnant women, children, were forced to march with no food, sleeping quarters, to their deaths, either on the way or when they would arrive at these concentration camps. So Wallenberg came in and was able to put a temporary halt to some of it, save a lot of the Jews that were about to be put on trains, sometimes at the last minute, and then again to establish these safe houses, and not only safe houses as an extension of the embassy, but he had 40 doctors, two hospitals, a soup kitchen, and even an orphanage set up in these Jewish ghettos that became safe places for them.
So how did he meet his end? I understand that is still, in terms of its actual history, a bit of a mystery.
Well, yeah, it is very mysterious, and of course it's been in the news now again lately because President Obama was approached by the half-sister of Raoul Wallenberg and asked to, you know, question Vladimir Putin about it, and he said he would do so. Oddly enough, what the work Wallenberg was doing was countering the work of the Nazis. The Russians came in, who you would think in some ways would be on his side, or he would be on their side, or however you want to look at it, fighting the same enemy, but they were fighting the same enemy for very different reasons. You know, if you're caught between the Nazis and the Soviets, that's not a good place to be. And no one knows exactly what happened to him or why, but he was arrested during the Soviet siege of and liberation of Budapest on January 17, 1945. This was an illegal arrest because of Wallenberg had diplomatic immunity. International law was on his side, working for the embassy. He was arrested by the Soviet army, taken into custody by what would eventually become what was the forerunners to the KGB. And there are theories, but no one really knows why. He was suspected of being a spy for the U.S., which, frankly, he very well might have been. His capitalism and his wealth and family ties did not help him with the communist socialists. A recent theory, it's kind of a two-part thing, that he was working closely with Hungarian military officers who were active in the anti-Nazi resistance, who also had documentation against the Soviets. And so, you know, Stalin, of course, had this kind of general paranoia, and from their view, if he was more than just this neutral diplomat, they would then believe that he had not only important information, but perhaps a threat. So it was a combination of all these things and maybe other things that we don't even know about. But we don't know. There's been different answers that have come out of Russia and the Soviet Union about when he died and how he died. Was it a heart attack, 6 months later? Two years later. Was it a heart attack 2 years later? Was he executed? There have been different answers given at different times. I guess the latest officially thing is that he was executed in 1947. And then finally in 2000, Russia officially rehabilitated him, not as a war criminal, but as a victim of political repression. So it's a sad end and may make Wallenberg look, you know, from the eyes of the world, like, well, he saved all these Jews, but he could not save himself. Did he not in the end lose? And of course, the value placed on one single life, not to mention the 100,000 that he saved, is immeasurable. But furthermore, from a Christian perspective, we understand that in losing our lives, we save it. In other words, we are those who believe in the resurrection through death. We believe we are joined to that in baptism, into Christ's death and resurrection. So we are not those who cannot see victory even in the midst of and through death. And I think that's true for Wallenberg.
It's kind of a touchy question. I mean, a thorny question. But in what ways is he, in some sense, an example of a Christian statesman? Because, I mean, fake passports, skirting the law, muscling your way through any situation may not what you want in your politician. But in what ways is he an example of a Christian statesman?
Well, in that his work was solely and courageously and unflinchingly focused on his neighbor's needs. The doctrine of vocation calls us, as I alluded to earlier, not to focus on our own spirituality, our own needs, our own holiness, but to focus on what the neighbor needs. Of course, guided by God's law, and of course shaped by and informed by and you know, lived through the gospel. I think that Wallenberg stared evil in the face and did what he could in goodness for his neighbor. And so I think in that sense, he's an example to us. And of course, we have to realize that, you know, scripturally speaking, we have Romans 13. Romans 13, in terms of submission to government, is also understood in light of Acts 5:29, which tells us we must obey God rather than men. And these are, as you said, touchy questions. We cannot necessarily take these things into our own hands. We need the corporate conscience of the church and of others. Wallenberg did not act alone. He had several, many that helped him in Budapest. So, you know, we always must test, are we doing this for selfish reasons? Are we doing it for fame and glory? Or are we truly doing it for the neighbor and our, and is God's will on our side. That must be tested against Scripture. It must be tested within the community of faith. But then we must act. We can't sit on the sidelines, as it were, inactive because we're afraid of sin. We're not to fear that. We are to fear only God, and we trust that we walk under grace as we serve neighbor.
Pastor Eric Andre is associate pastor for campus ministry at First Trinity Lutheran Church in Pittsburgh, a native of Sweden, and a lecturer on Raoul Wallenberg. Pastor Andre, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you. And just one recommendation I would have for a book with some very powerful, moving anecdotes I didn't get to share today is, and there's many out there, but one is called Wallenberg Lost Hero by Danny Smith. Wallenberg Lost Hero. So thank you, Todd, for having me, and God bless.
Folks, here's a great way that you can help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc., through Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. If you earmark a charitable donation of funds for Lutheran Public Radio through Thrivent Choice, Thrivent will donate an extra $25 to Issues, etc. Whatever your donation through Thrivent Choice, they will add an extra $25. Now, you need to designate funds for Lutheran Public Radio through Thrivent Choice online before October 31st to get that $25 extra as a donation. For more information, just go to the donate page at issuesetc.org and look for the Thrivent logo. When we come back, it's hour two of Issues Etc. on this Friday afternoon, September the 6th. Still 2 hours to go. Shane Rosenthal will be our guest. We're going to talk about secularism and our children and the degree to which the church has made itself complicitous in the aims of secularism, making this world and now more important than the world to come. Shane Rosenthal of the White Horse Inn will be our guest on the other side of the break. Bobby Ross Jr. will join us after that. We'll talk about some media coverage of religion stories. We'll talk with Pro Football Hall of Fame cornerback Roger Worley about the St. Louis Rams, who I think begin Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, as the NFL season kicks off. Pastor Charles St. Ange will be with us for part three of our series on Christianity and science. We'll talk about the ethical issues that are inevitable in the conflict or the alleged conflict between Christianity and science. And then we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We'll be right back with hour two of Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
In Hosea 4, we read, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." At the CLCC, we educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Christians would if they learned what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website at theclcc.org. See what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And encourage your pastors to hold an event in your area. For more information, go to theclcc.org.
Are you looking for a Christ-centered, cross-focused church? Check out the Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Are you tired of worship that's more about self-help than the Savior, the Christian rather than the Christ, and Christ in you instead of Christ for you? It's not about you, it's about Jesus for you. Find a church near you, issuesetc.org, and click Find a Church.